Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM, and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you on this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Kelsey Wentling. She is a river steward with the Connecticut River Conservancy. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
Well, cleanup events are underway up and down the Connecticut River from the Sound up to Canada, but it's a little different from last year. Tell us what is happening.
Sure. So for folks who are familiar with our Source to Sea cleanup, it's an annual event, and usually it takes place over the span of 2 to 3 days towards the end of September. Of course, this year, everything is different in terms of how we're interacting with one another in our communities. So instead of concentrating the event around a weekend, we decided to make all of September our cleanup month. And this means groups can go out in smaller numbers, disperse in greater distances, and make sure everyone's staying safe and, still getting out to our rivers, but in a safe fashion.
How do you see people organizing these events in these COVID times?
Well, for something like our cleanup, we have created an online registration process where we invite leaders of different groups to come in and create a group. And then participants can then register for their group and then go out. So it's a little bit more DIY style than it was before, where we were managing more folks, but that allows local communities to have greater autonomy and kind of decide what feels right for them.
Now, is it just the Connecticut River proper, or is it also the streams and lakes that are near the river in the watershed?
Good question. So our cleanup encompasses the entire watershed. And just in case folks aren't familiar with the term watershed, a watershed is a way of delineating a piece of land so that all the water that falls within that area of land will eventually make it into the Connecticut River and then the Long Island Sound. So that includes streams, brooks, any tributaries, parking lots, parks, your own backyard, really anything within that watershed area.
And for Connecticut, give us an idea of how big the Connecticut River watershed is.
Sure. So in Connecticut, we start sort of up towards Enfield. It winds about 60-ish miles down through central Connecticut, through Hartford, Middletown, down to Old Saybrook, where it goes out into the Sound. In terms of square miles, I'm not totally sure, but it's pretty encompassing, and mostly that capital region down to lower river area in central Connecticut.
And we're over a third of the way through the month of September at this point. How many folks have gotten out there thus far?
So far, we've had in Connecticut probably close to 50 or 100, somewhere around there. And they're going out kind of all over the state. People are coming from outside our watershed to do a cleanup, which has been really great, and finding areas that are local to them. So I think folks are eager to get outside, which has been great this year.
If people are hearing this morning and want to go out and clean up today, what's your advice to them?
So I would say head over to our website, ctriver.org. We have a lot of really great information on there on how to do it. Spots that might need special attention if you don't already have one in mind. We have a map of that. But it can really be pretty simple. It could be you, your friends and family, maybe people that you're potting with for the pandemic. And then head on out. Collect some trash, make sure you have a plan to dispose of it. And then one thing that's really important to us that we ask all our groups to do is to keep data on the items that they're collecting. And this year, we have a new tool we're using called CleanSwell. It's a phone app that the Ocean Conservancy created. So whenever you pick up an item, we ask folks to just mark it down on that app so that we know what's out there.
What items are typically found, and are there some surprises that have shown up over the years?
Definitely some surprises. I hear back from groups every year about things I could never have imagined ending up in the Connecticut River. And that can include things that are large, like refrigerators and mattresses. But last year, someone told me they found a hand-painted egg from Italy, or a Coke bottle still unopened that looked like it was from the 50s. So there are some odd things there, but I'd say the more common items would include beverage containers, so plastic bottles, plastic bags, cigarette butts, personal hygiene products. And this year, we are curious to see if people will find a lot of PPE, like gloves and masks.
Are you hopeful to find fewer plastic bags, given that many places have instituted bans and put restrictions on them?
Yes. Especially in Connecticut, some of the other watershed states, it's not been as sweeping, but we are hopeful that those are gradually being kind of phased out of our ecosystems. I anticipate that it'll be some time. We still see them circulating around. I am hopeful about that. I do know that because of COVID, some areas were in fact offering plastic bags again, which is unfortunate. So hopefully there's no spike there from people starting to use them again. But I think they're on the way out.
Now, the Conservancy covers the entire stretch from Canada down to the Sound, but you are based in Middletown. In Connecticut, are there certain quote-unquote trouble spots when it comes to rubbish being found in the river? I'm thinking maybe a bend in the river or something where things collect?
Yes. So that's a great question. And there are a couple of places. So as you mentioned, some of the coves and inlets where the water is moving a little bit more slowly, they do catch there. So Weathersfield Cove, for example, is a good example of that. It's a pretty consistent site in terms of needing to be cleaned up. And then there are other areas that just could use a little bit more love. So I think about the Hockanum River in East Hartford, or even in Middletown, we have the Cog and Chog and Mattabesset River, which have a good amount of trash as well.
Have you done the math on how much trash collectively has been picked up over the years from this effort?
Yeah, so that is a part of the data that we collect from our volunteers. I haven't aggregated it across the 24 years of the cleanup, but I know that last year, watershed-wide, we got 67 tons of trash, and I think someone converted to what that weight would be in elephants, and this thing, it's like 16 elephants or something.
Do you think the thinking has changed over the years in how we use the river as a resource? I'm thinking years ago, we used to have, you know, more drainage and in some cases even sewage flowing into the river, and, you know, we're a part of the country where there were a lot of mills and dumping dye and other chemicals into the river. Has the thinking changed?
I think it has. I talked to a lot of people who have lived along the river for maybe their whole life or visited it frequently. And people tell me that a couple decades ago, you would never touch the water, you would never go swimming, you didn't see as much wildlife. And these days, the water's clean to swim in for the most part. And then you see a lot of boaters out there and a lot of wildlife returning to our local ecosystems. And I think that's reflective of how we've come to value our rivers in a different way and understand that out of sight, out of mind does not necessarily apply here. Although I will say, you mentioned sewage, and unfortunately, there are still things like sewage overflows into the river, and there's work to be done. But I do agree with your assessment that our mentality has shifted a bit to greater stewardship of this resource.
With that in mind, give us an idea of where the health stands of the river on the larger spectrum, you know, going from the low point to a river that's pristine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. I'd say if I'm looking at like a cup of water, we're a little bit over halfway. I think The water is clean. I think there's this misconception out there that some people really don't want to go into the Connecticut River, but in fact, a lot of places are clean for swimming and fishing and boating. So I do encourage people to get out there and enjoy it. At the same time, we know that we have issues with nitrogen loading and runoff carrying different types of pollutants into the water. So in an ideal world, if you can imagine, we would want to be able to drink out of the river or something like that. But I, of course, do not recommend that. So we've got work to do, but it's pretty healthy.
We talked about bags a bit earlier. How big an issue is plastic pollution in the river?
Plastic is certainly the number one item we find in the river. And in fact, we're later this year going to do some microplastics monitoring to get a better sense of how plastic breaks down and what that looks like. But it is a significant issue. And I think one thing we're trying to communicate is that it's not just an issue on the part of litter bugs, but also on corporations and producers who produce items that are maybe wrapped in plastic or sold in plastic containers. So what we'd really like to see is not just a greater awareness on the part of people like us, the consumers, but also corporations offering us alternatives to plastic, like compostable containers or reusable things. So I think between those two things, greater consumer awareness and producer responsibility, we could really reduce the amount of plastic getting into the water.
And remind us, what is the lifespan of a piece of plastic that might get dumped into the Connecticut River? It's going to outlive you and me.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, hundreds of years. It's some plastics, like styrofoam is a type of plastic. We don't even know if it will ever fully go away. So, you know, each item does have a significant impact on the river, and all the plastic that we've created is still here on Earth. It's not degraded. And if it does degrade, basically that means it's breaking down into smaller pieces of plastic until we care about it a little bit less. So the ideal option here would be just to reduce the plastic even being produced.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Kelsey Wentling. She is a river steward with the Connecticut River Conservancy. They are doing a cleanup all this month along the Connecticut River watershed from Canada all the way down to the Sound. Give us an idea of some of the wildlife that has really rebounded along the river in recent decades, given efforts to clean it up.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, a lot of people talk to me about, and I've seen it myself, bald eagles along the river, osprey, a lot of different birds. And I think that's reflective not just of habitat for these animals, but also a food source. So fish returning to the river. Part of what we do at our organization in the spring is fish monitoring programs to collect data to see how fish populations are recovering. And so things are looking good. Again, progress to be made. Over many decades, the fish population declined drastically. So it's on the rebound, but there are many, many different kind of animals you can see. Just the other day, actually saw a deer swimming in the river, which I didn't even know was possible.
How good is the Connecticut River for fishing, and what sorts of fish might people find if they drop a line in?
Sure. So a ton of people go fishing on the Connecticut River. Some fish that we monitor for are river herring, so like blueback, herring, different kinds of river trout. We mentioned sea lamprey a while ago. People don't really fish for sea lamprey, but they're an important part of the ecosystem. So there are, and on the tributaries, there are many great spots for people to drop a line in.
You mentioned lampreys. They are an interesting case. People might not really recognize them as fish, and I believe they go out to sea and then come back and die, and other life forms use their remains for nutrients. Do I have that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I have a special place in my heart for lamprey. people tend to find them horrifying to look at because they look kind of like eels, and they're known as the vampires of the sea because they're parasitic in marine environments. But I do want to say, once they get into the rivers, they don't feed at all. So nothing to worry about in terms of a lamprey attaching onto you. And if you see one, that would be indicative of a healthy aquatic environment.
And that's not the case in some other places. For example, some lakes, they're not considered native and they're considered a bad thing, but that's not the case in the Connecticut.
Correct. And that's a really common misunderstanding that so in places like Lake Champlain or the Great Lakes, you in fact do not want to have lamprey there. But in the Connecticut River, as you mentioned, they're a really important source of nutrients when they swim back up river to spawn and then die.
Give us an idea of the role that the river plays in the overall environment. How important is it to other pieces of our environmental puzzle?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good question, partly because, unfortunately, not everyone has equal access to the river. So if you're someone who's not really a water person, or you're not really sure if you're near a river, you may not think about it in the way that you think about something like clean air and clean land. But when I think about the river, I don't necessarily parse it out from those things because our environment is so interdependent on having clean water, clean air, and, you know, clean lands to live in. So, you know, of course, I'm biased, but I really believe the rivers that we live around are integral to maintaining these healthy ecosystems. So they're a source, as I kind of mentioned with birds, they provide food sources, obviously water source, but then research goes into how things like estuaries can act as carbon sinks to mitigate the impacts of climate change. So it's really tied to just about everything you can think of.
Do you have a favorite place on the Connecticut River?
I get asked this question a lot, and I think I give a different answer every time. But I have to say, I love spending time on the estuary. An estuary is where the salt water meets the fresh water down at the mouth of the river, so near the Long Island Sound. And you see a really great diversity of wildlife down there. The river is very wide, lots of different types of plants and animals, and it's a really beautiful area.
Are there one or two things about the Connecticut River that you think might surprise people when they hear it?
Yeah, a little tidbit I have heard is that the Connecticut River supplies 70% of all the fresh water that goes into the Long Island Sound, which to me, I think is fascinating because then I think about the impact of our healthy river systems and how that then impacts people even in Long Island and New York who use the Long Island Sound. So I find that a little bit surprising.
You mentioned river access and how it's not equal across the board, but how do you balance river access and development and leaving a natural resource in a pristine state for future generations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is a combination of, I guess, you know, individual stewardship along with sensible policies implemented by state, local, and federal governments, and then work of organizations and towns to steward the river. Because I do believe that there are ways to use the river that lead to economic prosperity for local communities, and that don't necessarily negatively impact the river. So there is a balance there. And when we have a framework for the state or even at the federal government that supports economic growth while also supporting and environmental research and stewardship and cleanups like ours, then I think you can strike that balance. Because to me, if people aren't using the river, if they don't have access to it on their boats or fishing or swimming, then it's hard to get people to care about the river. Why should they really if they can't use it? So In some ways, using the river, I think, leads to a healthier river.
When it comes to environmental policy, are there particular areas where Connecticut really excels or where things could be improved?
Yeah, I think Connecticut is really making some strides to address the climate crisis, and some of that's research, but the governor also has a council on climate change at the moment, GC3. And so this pulls in a lot of different stakeholders to engage on the issue with subgroups that are specific to rivers. And then I think we do have some strong policies for waste reduction and recycling for things like mattresses or paint. But I do think there is certainly room for improvement. Bringing it back to the cleanup a little bit, we find a lot of tires in the river that people dump illegally because they're expensive to pay for to dump. And there are policies called extended producer responsibility that builds the cost into the cost of the tire sale. So things like that would really reduce tire waste in the river. And it's actually, speaking of rivers, similar with abandoned vessels, where there's a bit of an issue with people kind of running aground their old boats because the policies and the law is not quite up to date.
Also, going back to the cleanup, I know some areas are in a drought. How big a concern is that, and might that actually help cleanup efforts this month to expose things that would typically be underwater?
Yeah, that's a good silver lining. So you're right, as the water levels are lower, it's easier to find trash that's floated down the river and lodged maybe lower on the waterline. Or even see things that we missed in previous years. But this kind of thing is a concern, and we anticipate it being exacerbated as our climate changes. And that's why I do feel that it's really critical that we're all taking climate change seriously and taking steps to address it.
Now, as people go out and clean up the river this month, you have a hashtag, the River Conservancy does. It is River Witness. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, so along with the changes we're implementing this year due to COVID, we want to make sure that people can share in new ways what they're seeing. So our hashtag River Witness campaign has a couple purposes. One is just to share parts of the river that you really love and want other people to see or to visit. So someone in Vermont could see what it looks like in Connecticut or vice versa. And then the other piece of it is we know that people who are local to their river systems can testify as to what's good there or what needs improvement. So if you're seeing some sort of pollutant or trash, or if there's a dam that's maybe, you know, blocking a lot of fish from getting upriver, using the hashtag River Witness highlights these issues and allows us to kind of get a greater understanding of what's happening and what we can do going forward.
If people want to know more about the Connecticut River Conservancy, where can they go?
The best place to go is our website, ctriver.org, but we are also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter,
where you can find that hashtag River Witness. She is Kelsey Wentling, River Steward with the Connecticut River Conservancy. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.